Chapter 36.
The disorganized city-states of Makwe didn't bring me much value. They simply fought the other Makwains, as they have been doing for centuries. As Banadar, on the other hand, brought a mighty army. For my part, I had the combined strength of the old kingdoms of Sunsen, Lumos, and Daymark, as well as the larger nations of Gentry, Daemon, Delavi, Main, and Frey. The Dawn Empire had grown mighty indeed, but to wage war on six fronts against Xantium, Chires, Leonta, Tolson, Orden, and Lurain, I needed all the resources my people could produce. I believed that it was for them and their safety, not realizing that I was constantly sending their sons to die in my battles, squeezing them for every drop of productivity and coin I could get. The fighting went on for many years, though I made sure to take Chires as fast as possible, attacking them from Asbanadar, which provided the perfect staging platform.
Dalen soared through the air. His mass-manipulated jumps were so great that they felt like flying. Instead of reducing his mass, which wrought havoc on his velocity, Dalen found that he could land much easier by increasing his strength. Sometimes he would land on the side of a building and enhance his grip, which let him stick to it as if he were covered in glue. Dalen leapt again, arcing through the sky, his gauntleted left hand holding his new backsword to prevent it flailing too much at his side. He had guessed it would take a while for Arik to sort things out at the docks, so Dalen had taken his time looking for a new sword. The one he had now was a fine spring-steel backsword with a broad blade, a different sword type from Imperius, for steel functioned very differently to sonicals. Dalen was a traditionalist and felt swords should be carried in case of night. The dueling culture was just a byproduct, not the reason. Thus the backsword he purchased could easily cut a shade in two, as all swords should. After purchasing his sword, Dalen had done a little searching and found a darkstone bender to replace the dagger in his gauntlet. It was quite the revelation that darkstone could nullify light binding, and having that dagger had just gotten him out of a very sticky situation. Dalen had never even heard rumor that the knights bore such a fatal weakness, even from the spies he had sent to infiltrate them. Just another secret the knights kept, and for obvious reason. Had he known this when he had been in power, light, he could have defeated them easily. If he'd just tipped shot spikes with Darkstone, he would have rained night down on them. It was a troubling thought. The knights weren't nearly as invincible as they acted, which wasn't good. The world truly needed them, especially because of the shade. Dalen would keep their secret, but that didn't mean he couldn't use this secret to his advantage. After replacing the dagger, Dalen had stopped for dinner, all the while wondering how Arik would deal with those arch-knights. Oh boy, would that have been a sight! Now he was making his way to the hotel where he had planned to meet Arik. He landed on the Fulton's penthouse patio. Instantly he sensed a bright inner light from within the next penthouse over. That light had to be Arik's, Dalen knew, as there were very few people as bright as he. Jumping to the next terrace over, Dalen saw that this penthouse was much larger than the others. Indeed, this must have been the Imperial suite. Dalen wondered why Arik, who was so reluctant to even rent a penthouse, would purchase the most expensive room among them. Then Dalen sensed the two other inner lights inside. Arik wasn't alone. Hotel attendants? Maybe some constables waiting for him? Or could it be the last two people Dalen wanted to see? Dalen walked across the terrace and opened the double glass doors that led to the penthouse's sitting room. The two arch-knights stood inside with Arik, who was relaxing on a couch and drawing away in his sketchbook. Dalen's eyes were instantly drawn toward Lyra, and seeing her brought a sharp stab of pain and guilt which quickly turned to caution. These two knights had just attacked him half a fall earlier. "They're not here to fight," Auric said, clearly noticing Dalen's defensive posture. Dalen glanced to Auric and then looked back to the knights distrustfully.
"He can't lie, remember?" Lyra said.
"Then why are you here?" Dalen asked accusingly.
"We've come to an arrangement."
"Funny how I'm clearly not included in the we, even though I'm the one the arrangement must be about."
"The arrangement will require your acceptance too, Dalen," Auric said. "But I do believe it's the best option."
Dalen glared at the Archknights.
"All right, let's hear it." "Lightbringer Auric has convinced us to not take you into Archknight custody," Lyra said. "Though you will turn yourself over to the constabulary to face the charges against you. If you're found guilty, I'll see that your sentence be carried out. If you're innocent, we will remain with you to see that you don't abuse your powers or give away any secrets until the time comes that you keep your word and join our ranks."
"This is the only peaceful possibility," Auric said, answering Dalen's frustrated expression.
"No. Another possibility is that you knights could go and shove all this up your..."
Dalen's heated words died in his mouth the instant he looked back to Lyra's face. Guilt and heartache came upon him instead.
"Archon Lyra has already spoken to her superiors, and they've agreed," Auric added.
Lyra's face flashed with deep displeasure at that comment, but her very presence was recalling such terrible guilt within Dalen that he had barely noticed. In fact, it was hard to think anything at all, standing face to face with one of the young girls that had been forced into his bed more than 20 years ago. One of the young girls he had raped, again and again. The more he looked at her, the worse his guilt grew. Dalen tried to fake composure.
"Fine. I suppose we're going to have to get used to each other."
"Nice to meet you,"
Dalen added, as he turned abruptly and walked to one of the rooms. He closed the double door behind him and leaned on it, slowly losing the strength in his legs, sliding to the floor. There he remained as the pain of past memories grew to consume him, his eyes seeing only those things in his mind, and there they found nothing but torment. Auric kept looking at the double doors that Dalen had closed.
I thought he would have kicked up a bigger fuss than that.
Yet he did not look happy. Not at all.
Auric's Chirasian kinsman, Cuseg, replied.
Good, Lyra said. It's only fitting that he hates this situation as much as we do.
Auric frowned.
There's no need to be petty.
Petty?
Lyra spat.
You've strong-armed this whole situation, Bringer. Who's being petty here?
And now we're companions, so we'd best find a way to get along.
It can be hard to get along with this one,
Cuseg said, nodding to Lyra.
But she is good.
Oh, great way to show loyalty, Cuseg.
I do not find this as bad as you. My Sirium brother is right that we cannot arrest the boy. It is not justice. Now the boy knows we will follow him until he joins the Order and he is not fighting us.
But babysitting isn't what we should be doing. We should be hunting out the Blackened Shade.
Auric cleared his throat.
Surely a woman who bears such a sacred duty would use more civil language.
This is what I say to her,
Cuseg chimed in. Lyra rubbed her forehead.
Yes, I know. Thank you.
It is you who said we will follow the boy,
Cuseg said to Lyra.
And now you say you do not want to? Is he a danger to the Order, or is he not?
Of course he's a danger,
Lyra said. Auric chose that time to interject.
I think you'll see differently as you get to know him.
This whole situation stinks, Lyra said. I need sleep. Cuseg, keep an eye on the brat and make sure he doesn't sneak off without us. Wake me by mid-low.
Lyra walked to another bedroom and shut the doors behind her.
Auric looked to his Chirasian brother and asked in their native language, Would you like some company?
Cuseg looked at him with a blank face.
Sirium, you wish to be in my presence?
The Archknight's Chirasian speech was of the formal, prestigious accent.
clear and perfectly spoken.
"Of course," Arik said. "It's been a while since I've been able to spend time with anyone from Chirais."
"It's my responsibility to explain to you," Cusack said, "as you're obviously more Hamaran than Chirasian, that I am a Losam and shunned by our people. But as a knight, you must also show me respect."
"I know what your mark is. My parents were full Chirasian, after all. But I grew up in Hamara, and I couldn't care less."
Cusack's face barely changed, but from his experience with his father, Arik knew that Cusack was pleased. Cusack also seemed to relax and took a seat on one of the couches.
"I can't express how good it is to speak in our language. When I speak in Hamaran, I feel like a dribbling idiot, barely able to make myself understood."
"Oh, you do fine," Arik said, creating some plates of sticky bread on the low table in front of the couch. "Please, help yourself."
Cusack looked at it with a blank face, but the tone of his voice conveyed distrust.
"I've never seen a dish like this."
"Then you're in for a treat."
Cusack sighed.
"I don't think so. It's clearly Hamaran, and the food of this land is horrible."
Arik smiled in reply, but didn't say anything. Cusack sighed and took a piece of sticky bread. After chewing a little, his eyes brightened.
"Siriam, this is actually good."
"That appears to be more of a miracle than the fact I created it out of light."
"But it is,"
Arik laughed.
"You must have been starved of fine food for some time."
"Yes," Cusack exclaimed. "Everything I've purchased in this land is either too bland, lacking any spice, or so overpowered that it's as if the ingredients are at war."
He held up the sticky bread.
"This has been the first truly good thing I've eaten since coming here."
"Where has your food come from?"
"From the vendors, of course, and the regular meals from the hold."
"Ah, that's why."
"What? Have I been doing something wrong?"
"Unlike Chirais, anyone allowed to publicly sell food in Hamara doesn't have to undergo formal training or meet a certain standard, apart from the health and safety laws."
"Yes, I've learned that."
"Instead, the master chefs work in places called restaurants. They're like a formal supply store that sells cooked meals. It's there that you'll find the true heights of Hamaran cuisine."
"So Hamaran restaurants are like Eurasian street vendors?"
"In terms of quality, yes."
"Oh,
your companion would have told you as much."
"You have no idea how hard it is to communicate with that woman."
"You don't get along?"
"No,"
the Eurasian replied stridently.
"I like her very much. She is a strong woman, has a kind heart, and wishes to help anyone in need. But whenever I try and help her overcome her weaknesses, all I do is manage to offend. She has such amazing strength that she hasn't embraced, having given in to her fears too easily. The Eurasian way would help her greatly, for she needs to master herself. I tried this when we first met."
"Oh dear. You weren't naked, were you?"
"Of course I was. She, more than anyone I've met, needs to confront the weaknesses of her flesh and learn to master them.
Hamarans view the body very differently."
"So I've learned, as backward as it is. By hiding their nakedness, they make it taboo to one another, making their bodies like hidden prizes that must be earned. And because they rarely ever see a naked body, when they do, their own bodies take control. Do you know how much rape is in this land? Because the body is held as a prize, those who cannot earn it choose to take it by force. It's horrendous."
"I wonder if the lower rate of sexual assault in Chirais is more due to the penalty rather than cultural differences of modesty."
"The penalty is as bad here.
Many men would rather die than publicly lose their manhood," Arik pointed out. "And there are other regretful cultural practices here in Hamara that might inflate the difference."
Such as
social shame? Women who've been sexually assaulted here can, unfortunately, be seen as damaged goods. Because of this, there are many cases where women choose not to report the crime.
What?
Cusack said in disbelief.
I know. It's horrible.
It's unforgivable.
Every land has unfortunate elements within their culture, Arik said, pointing to his forehead and giving Cusack a knowing look.
Cusack sniffed.
What was your profession? Arik asked at length.
I was a chef.
Ah, that explains it.
Cusack nodded.
My standards are very high. I haven't had the opportunity to cook in so long, but that was my choice. I am an arch-knight now. Not that anyone would ever accept food from a low sum.
Amarans don't care about that.
Then they don't know my shame.
I'd happily eat anything you made, Arik said. In fact, judging by Eurasian standards, if you really are a qualified chef, I would be delighted.
Cusack's brow rose.
There's a kitchen right here. I would love to taste some genuine food from our homeland. It has been quite a while.
For the first time since Arik had met this serious man, he smiled. And it was a true, genuine smile.
I would be honored, Sirium.
Dalen hadn't moved a fraction from where he had slumped against the door, his body frozen as his mind drowned in misery. He kept drifting in and out of troubled sleep, but now his internal body clock was telling him a new fall had dawned. Dalen still didn't move. He couldn't face her again. He was simply unable to bear the guilt and pain. He was such a coward. But she wasn't going anywhere. What was Dalen going to do? Truly, the light hated him. It wasn't enough to lengthen his torturous life. Now Dalen had to face what was likely the most terrible and significant reminder of his crimes, one of his past victims. And not just any victim, but one of the most innocent and vulnerable souls that he had ever violated. Lyra hadn't changed much, yet at the same time she seemed like a different person. She carried herself with such strength. Light, she was more than just strong, she was an arch-knight. Yet still her face, though aged, was exactly the same as that of the poor frightened young girl that Dalen had taken such pleasure in abusing. Lyra had been one of the youngest at 14 years old. Hard to believe that back then he'd thought he had standards, 14 years being the legal age of marriage and consent during the Dawn Empire. Daedalus the Conqueror made sure that no girl he took was under that age, like that made what he had done any better. Dalen remembered how he had convinced himself that each girl he took had come willingly, though deep in the back of his mind he really knew the truth. He just didn't ever admit it to himself. Not until much later, at least. In fact, any honest man would have found the truth impossible to miss, for it was in the fearful eyes of each girl, Lyra far from the least among them. She had been so innocent, so scared. In his later years, Dalen didn't even let the girls wear clothes for the length of time they stayed in the palace, dressing them up like Eurasian women. Just another type of humiliation and abuse he had inflicted on them.
I've been such a light-cursed monster, Dalen said to himself,
recoiling from the memory which seemed clearer and more vivid than ever before. He couldn't help but recoil, as any sane and good person would when thinking of such a perverted and foul a thing as raping a frightened 14-year-old girl. The problem was that Dalen couldn't recoil away from himself as much as he might try. For wherever he turned, he would find another vile perversion he had committed which only compounded his guilt. Dalen moved a shaking hand to the front of his face. Though young and strong, they were still the hands that had committed the crimes. How could he have done such acts? How could any man do such evil? Yet he had.
And now he was being punished for those crimes, and he deserved every bit of misery and torment that tortured him, including this new one, a constant reminder of his past sins. It was true that Dalen was unable to bear the full force of his guilt and self-hatred. He had been crushed by just a fraction of it that low fall. But even so, there eventually came a point where Dalen found that he could move again. He could bear it and keep on going, as the only other option was to lay down and die. Perhaps this was thanks to his infinite stubbornness and pride. He just couldn't allow himself to give up, regardless of how much he wanted to. Or perhaps it was a curse from the light, for it simply wouldn't let him die before his punishment was over, even if that meant giving him the strength to stand when he honestly felt that he was unable. Dalen grasped the door handle above him, and with one hand dragged the rest of his body up. He grunted under the strain. There was no physical resistance, but the emotional effort he had to exert at that moment was like pushing back against a mountain of guilt and loathing. Dalen found his feet eventually and stood strong. So, what was he going to do with a constant reminder of his worst crimes following him wherever he went? Suck it up and take the torture. Dalen knew that he was scum and deserved everything he was given. Such was his life.
Lyra hadn't slept much that low. Thankfully, she didn't need to. By bonding light to her body's ability to heal while she slept, 3 hours had the same effect as 9. The unfortunate thing was that this had left her a lot of time to think about the recent events. She had left her room and relieved Cusag from his watch. Cusag and the Bringer seemed to have had a great time together. The Bringer had gone to sleep at the same time Cusag did, finding their own rooms. The penthouse had 6 of them, which left Lyra alone with her thoughts in the bright sitting room as she stared at the closed doors to the boy's bedroom. When demanding this arrangement, she had acted out of duty and anger. After chasing that boy for so long, her instinctive reaction was to not let him go, which was why she fought so hard against the Bringer's defense. This was right, of course, as the Order's needs were paramount. That boy had to be watched. Of course, the best thing would have been to simply force the boy into the Order or execute him, but that damned Bringer was right. If the Archknights were willing to commit such a crime to protect themselves, even for the greater good, then the Order wasn't worthy of their power. That didn't mean her superiors agreed with her. Archallian Kennet had ordered her to go back and bring the boy to the hold by force. He had figured out, or he simply knew, being of higher rank, that the vigil could actually be performed by anyone, not just Archknights. What she suspected he didn't know was that the vow to fight evil wasn't necessary either. Still, Kennet's belief was enough to insist that the boy be brought in, knowing that if the governments learned the truth, they would do anything to learn the secrets of the vigil. Vowing to fight evil didn't mean that a man wouldn't serve the unjust interests of his own nation. Kennet understood this, and therefore the Bringer's threat to tell the government that the boy knew the secret of the vigil was enough for even Kennet to relent and admit, as much as he hadn't wanted to, that Lyra had forced the next best alternative. What Lyra hadn't considered until the boy came walking in was that she now had to constantly see someone who was basically a younger version of him. Lyra had enough trouble trying to control her anxiety when the subject of intimacy came up, let alone when thinking of that monster. How was she not supposed to think of him when looking at his own son? The boy not only had the exact same height, posture, and gait, but he sounded exactly like him. He was like a younger twin. Lyra's arms instinctively crossed to hug herself as she thought of the confrontation at the dock, where she had called him a pretender. He had answered back, "Hey, I was protecting people!" the anger in his voice, his expression. In that moment, it was as if she had been looking at Daedalus the Conqueror himself, and she had cowered. For that small span, she had been back in his bed, helpless, afraid, completely under his terrible power, being constantly abused once more. She had fought off the reaction quickly, her sense of duty and determination winning the battle. But still, that image was so frightening. It was that part of the boy that frightened her, his ability to become the conqueror in her eyes. "He is not his father," Lyra said again to herself. "He's just a lost and confused little boy who doesn't know how to use his powers." But then again, he did defeat that famous pirate, Lyra thought. That certainly tells of a capable and strong young man. He also freed those kidnapped girls. Oh, how Lyra's heart ached for those poor girls. She knew exactly what they had gone through, having experienced much the same. Except that she had never been rescued, she thought bitterly. Then Lyra noticed something. Her regard for the boy was different in that moment. The boy, Daylan, had saved a group of girls who were much like she had been, and had done exactly what Lyra would have done in the same situation, kill every last one of the sex slavers. That was something to appreciate in him. "This is how I need to see him, for who he is. The papers say he's a hero, and for those girls, at least, he is." Lyra breathed a sigh of relief, for when picturing Daylan in her mind, now it was much harder to see his father. One was a rapist and monster, while the other was apparently someone who killed those types of people. Someone that Lyra could not only put up with, but also someone that she might even be able to like.